Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's going to go. Alvarez ties the game.
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
This hour brought to you by Menards. Save big money at Menards.
The Parkins and Spiegel Show.
Yeah, Chicago sports for sure.
Afternoons on The Score.
Schwarber now will be lit for a pinch runner, Albert Almora. Bryant on 2-2. High fly ball into center. That is Davis. One step from the wall. Tagging is Almora with great base running. Zobrist coming up. Zobrist stands a base hit. Cubs will take the lead. Almora digging to the plate. Zobrist delivers 7-6 in the 10th.
There's a man that I don't know if he thought he'd play a role in tonight's seventh game.
But he scores the go-ahead run. And John, it was his heads-up base running. It really changed the complexion of this inning. It led to the intentional walk to Rizzo and led to the opportunity for Zobrist.
I'm telling you, if 10 guys were on the base, I don't know if 7 of them would have done what he did.
The Parkins and Spiegel Show. Afternoons on The Score.
Joe Buck called it the highlight of his broadcast life. On the call when the Cubs won the World Series, an absolutely huge moment for Albert Almora Jr. It was awesome to hear Joe Buck. I think we'll bring that back for you in the 5 o'clock hour if you missed. A man who was clearly happy and relaxed. This text has absolutely slayed me. I don't know if maybe we should do like a text of the show in terms of like funniest text or something like that to encourage even more interaction than we do. Shane's podcast, which we will hear some of, Bourbon and a Buddy with Rick Hahn. We'll hear some of it at 4 o'clock. Texter says, I thought it was Bourbon and Bubby. Very confused why Rick Hahn was on this
one. Yeah, that makes sense. Rick Hahn out there with my mother-in-law who goes by Bubby or with your late Bubby
that Shane calls Bubba.
Yeah.
Well, we had that podcast for a while, Bourbon and Bubba, where I just got Bubba tanked.
Yeah, yeah, which is surprising given that I don't think I ever saw her drink.
Well, it led to her demise.
I do like the idea. Wow, is that what it was?
I thought it was her cooking.
I thought we had a John McSherry situation.
Again?
I know, I went there again.
Again?
I thought a bourbon and a bubby, though, just like a random bubby that you grab somebody's bubby. If you've got a bubby who you think would like to have a bourbon with
Shane. Tell some stories.
I love getting grandmas drunk. It's my calling card.
Old people are good storytellers.
For the most part, yeah. Especially when you get a couple of bourbons in them,
am I
right?
That's what I'm saying. It's actually not a terrible... There are like 3 million podcasts out there. There are at least 2 million that would be worse than Bourbon and Bubby.
Maybe breaking news could be brought to you by the Bourbon and a Bubby podcast.
That's true.
It's entirely possible.
Okay, so you want to hear the Hayward stuff or the Almora stuff? Oh, God, is this exacerbating you already? You haven't even heard it.
The Hayward stuff is... I'm a little frightened by the Hayward stuff.
Okay, well then let's start there.
Okay. Thanks, buddy.
No problem. I didn't know that it was going to be like this.
Well, I mean,
they might be the worst team in baseball. Don't let it hurt you this bad.
No. It's the fact that you know. What are you doing? What are you doing? You're I mean, he's a wonderful guy, is Jason Hayward. He's a terrific veteran, and he's a great mentor and stuff, and yet seeing him get starts and playing time over other people who you need to figure out what they could actually bring to the table, I find very frustrating and difficult to defend.
I'm with you, but so David Ross did an interview with our guys over at The Bigs, thebigs.us for the website. You can follow them. It's The Bigs on all their social media platforms. They do good stuff. They're at every damn sporting event. So like they're actually out there at the press conferences, in the locker rooms, doing really, really good stuff. So
it's the bigs. It's nice to see them get rewarded, honestly, for always being out there at these press conferences and putting in the work. They get a one-on-one, an exclusive with David Ross.
Yeah, I'm sure I have seen it. David sees them, sees their dedication, talks to those guys every day.
Yeah, so good stuff. And they ask about Jason Hayward, and this is how David Ross describes it.
One, there's a factor of, like, Jay Hay does so much on and off the field. He's helping Morrell in center field. I know his at-bats aren't where they want him to be, but he has a track record of having some success. I know there's going to be a time where we'll get some other younger guys out, but we're not even halfway through the season. And, you know, there's a loyalty factor from my standpoint, and I love that guy. And, you know, I know it's all about production at the end of the day, and that's what fans see, but there's so much more that he brings to the table. And we've already kind of lessened that role a little bit for him. He doesn't face lefties as much, and you know, he's been on board with that, and he does a lot for our group. And I understand he's not where he wants to be. He wants to get better, but he works hard every day and sets a really good example of letting these young guys know what it's like to be a big leaguer, how to be big leaguers. There's an art form to that. There's a way to go about your business, and Jay Hay is probably the best I've ever been around at setting that example for these young guys, and that's really important to me and our organization. And where we're at right now, I mean, that him and Wilson and Kyle, the guys that won the championship, know how to talk about winning, know how to do the little things. There's stuff that you guys don't see in game. He's coaching these guys up with, and like you said, like the, you know, Velasquez still learning. Yeah, he's coming. Him and I think the two other outfield spots in Vasquez just got here, and you know, I think Ortega's the other one that's swinging it well. I do DH him a lot, depending on lefty-righty matchup and where that's at. So, you know, Jay Hayes a little bit, he's been banged up a little bit. Part of that, you know, trying to work through that, play through that. There's so much that goes into that with him. But, you know, I understand where how players see or fans see it. Yeah, but I tell you, there's not one guy in that on our staff, this organization, or in that clubhouse as a player that wouldn't say nothing but good things about Jay Hay and how he helps us win on a daily basis.
So the thing is, that last part is true. Like, they will tell you, Cubs executive types, off the record, they're like, our heart breaks for Jason Hayward.
To see him play like that.
Because the guy is...
Hit like that.
Yeah, right. Because he is still one of the first ones there. He is still grinding on the tape. He is still trying to, you know, fix his swing and have it click. He is still doing the multiple workouts. Like, they will tell you that as a person, he's a 12 out of 10. And so the struggles do genuinely hurt them because they offered him a contract and he accepted it. Having said that, they can't be playing him this much. And when Suzuki comes back, I assume that they will not. And whether or not they DFA him or not, I don't know, but it's not going to be four or five starts a week. It's just not going to be. He doesn't need to start. He doesn't.
Well,
they shouldn't be starting him.
It's an unfortunate confluence of realities here. The realities, there are multiple things that are true here. There is absolutely a value for what Jason brings in terms of showing people how to do it. And when you're actually still playing, showing people that you, what you do as a player, even if you struggle, and like how you go about it, and also like being out there to talk to Morrell, to talk to these other outfielders in the midst of things, it definitely does have a value. I mean, Andrelton Simmons has been great for Nico Horner. Nico's been talking about that a lot recently, and several people have talked about Jason Hayward in that way. So that does have a value. It's got value to the whole organization, etc. But the at-bats, while you're learning, I'd rather see Nelson Velasquez, who's here, have those at-bats. I'd rather see Ortega, and Ross talks there about DHing him because they're showcasing him, and you might, you know, you'd rather see him get showcased in the outfield while he's also getting those at-bats as you're trying to build trade value for somebody. Obviously, when Jackson Frazier was here, or if he comes back, and that's the former Clint Frazier,
yeah,
you know, I want him to get at-bats and try to figure things out. There are multiple levels that you're using the season for, and trying to win games isn't one of them, frankly.
Well, that's the thing. Like, I think that there's a couple of things at play here. Because, you know, Peoria, Madden, multiple people, if he's such a great coach, just make him a coach. Make him a coach. Yeah. Yeah. It is kind of shocking, though,
that they don't have more highly touted young outfield guys up and ready to go. It's not like there are five great outfielders on the Cubs or five high upside outfielders on the Cubs.
If Brennan Davis were healthy here and pushing it,
if Suzuki was healthy, if Davis was healthy, it would be a different there'd be a different level of outrage to it. The guys that you're talking about giving at bats to him,
there's not many people lining up to scream about Rafael Ortega not getting like run in the outfield, or Nelson Velasquez not getting at bats.
And Clint Frazier, what, he clears waivers and he's playing AAA and he's not good, evidently. He might be done.
And I was screaming about Clint Frazier not getting at bats at the expense of Jason Hayward. I was tweeting about it. I was screaming about it. Yeah. It was bothering me. It was really, really bothering me. When Suzuki
But I'm just
is
saying,
back,
it's not like the industry, when they DFA'd him, everyone was like, oh my God, we got to go get Clint Frazier.
Right. No, and it's not. Right. It's also not like the closest comp to a DFA is not Justin Upton, who had one very expensive year left, and it's Robinson Cano, who was DFA'd with almost two full years of salary by the Mets. That's a team going for it, absolutely trying to win right now, who had a 40-man roster crunch that they did not want to mess with anything and did not want to give it bats while they're trying to win a division. That's not where the Cubs are. So you understand that they do have a little more wiggle room because of those two things, because there's not a proliferation of kids pushing against it.
And that's on them, by the way. Like, that's a roster construction issue. The fact that there aren't more people who you feel like absolutely have a future at outfielder.
That's because
it's where you roster the most players.
Yeah, it's because their strength in the system is lower.
No, I know.
Because Owen Casey is at single A, and because these other guys are at single A, and they're not going to come up and push just yet.
And so I think it is a totally valid criticism, and we've made it. I think that it is not as jarring right now because of the Davis injury and the Suzuki injury, but even having said that, there was a game, and it was before the Frazier DFA when you and I had talked about it on the show. And I should remember the circumstances, but, you know, short-term memory loss, lifestyle choices, it's all led to this point. What do you want from me? They're down two. It's the eighth inning. There's a runner at second base, and Jason Hayward's taking that at bat, and he grounds out to the right side.
Yeah, well,
and it's like that at bat, like a high leverage at bat in a game that is still in play, like that should just never go to
well,
him. Like
and that's
should,
the thing.
That should be done.
Remember when they pinch hit Patrick Wisdom for Jason Hayward?
Yeah.
A couple of, like a month ago or six weeks ago in a big moment, and Wisdom homered, and it was only like the fourth inning.
Right.
And it had been an opener situation, so the handedness of the pitchers switched and Ross went with it. I wish he would be more aggressive in doing those kind of things. And in those eighth inning at bats, go ahead and don't give it to him. You know, and that's where you hope that this balance you're trying to play here along the way is not too beholden to the loyalty that he's referencing. Texter mentions Lorenzo Cain, designated for assignment by the Brewers. Cain, this the final year of his deal, too. So, you know, Hayward's not in that final year. You thought maybe they would do it just like the Mets did it with Cano. But,
and the Brewers are in first place.
And the Brewers are in first place, which is why they did it. And also Cain kind of agreed to that, half volunteered it. That was a very interesting, very personal situation where Cain, they sat down together. What should we do here, Lorenzo? And Lorenzo said, I think we should call it, man.
I love that dude.
I think I've had a career, right?
I loved covering him.
Incredible, incredible human story.
All of it.
All the way.
Yeah.
From the very, very beginning. You know the beginnings, which were so rough. Dude who showed up for his first baseball practice as a teenager with no glove, no bats, no cleats, and was like, I want to play. How do we do this? And figured it out and then made the major leagues for 10 years.
Right. But basically self-taught, crazy athleticism, crazy good family guy, like the bought the mom the house with the first contract, take care of the kids, an awesome salt of the earth dude. So yeah, was sorry to see that, but I mean, he took the year off for COVID,
Yeah,
like you know, and he's been ramping down clearly for a little while.
He did. I was sorry to see it, but then when you read about it, you realize that he was very much a part of it, which most people don't
totally
get to do.
At peace with the decision,
and had just reached 10 years of service time.
Right, he got the pension. Yep. He got the whole thing. Got the big contract. Yep. Yeah, good. We should try to call him.
I'd love to.
I don't know if his number's still good, but we should try to cut him to tell his story. He's a really really good dude. So that is it's the Bigs did a good job getting. David Ross to talk loyalty. Bruce about Jason Hayward. Bruce Levine talked to Albert Almora. How he described his time with the Cubs was fairly interesting here.
It was a little muddy waters just because they wanted me to hit the ball in the air more, and then you know it was just I was young. I'm still young, but they wanted me to do these things, and I honestly didn't feel like it was explained in the right terms for me at that time in my career. So, you know, you're in the middle of, like, I want to stay the same player, but I want to do as I'm told, and I want to obviously play. And then I started, you know, not having the opportunities and to play a lot. And, you know, it's just so – it's just, like you said, I was just in the mix of it. And for a couple years there, I was kind of lost – I just lost who I was. I didn't know what to do. I didn't know. I felt like I had 15 different hitting stances in a month. It was a tough, dark time. I didn't know if I would ever get out of it. And it took some, really some grit, some determination. A lot of close people to me just to, you know, remind me who I was and what type of player I was. And obviously a lot of determination and will from my end to not let the game beat me and not let the, you know, because everybody gets put through these kinds of ringers and types of obstacles, but I just felt like I had to just keep going.
Wow. You know, Albert,
I always liked him.
I always liked him too. Very serious-minded guy, super mature as a kid, part of what they fell in love with and drafted him there, but really, really hard on himself.
Got lost in his own head. Like yep. But it's interesting to hear him talk about it. I mean, he doesn't take a ton of responsibility in that clip. Like, he talks about like the too many different voices. It wasn't explained too well to him. He had a serious, in my opinion, paralysis by analysis. Like, he could not let the last at bat go. Like, he took it into the field. He took that. Like, and I'm not saying it affected his defense, but like, he tensed up, man. Like, yeah. Like one at bat would become two at bats, would become three at bats. Like he was the definition of pressing and squeezing the bat too hard and that sort of guy. That's not all coaching. Like some of that has to be on you.
But some of that is coaching,
sure.
Because some of it is development. Like you got to know what kind of learner people are and make sure that you don't overwhelm them and make sure you speak to them correctly. And
they
also
changed quite a few hitting coaches.
They changed so many hitting coaches, and they were. And this is something I talked about a ton. At the time, they wanted everybody to be a contact hitter with two strikes after hitting for the fences for the first two strikes.
Right, and not everyone has that Rizzo ability.
No!
Not even a guy like Chris Bryant.
Very, very few. They messed up Schwarber that way, as Schwarber tried to do everything, because he could at some times be that way. But yeah, Coomer, we used to talk about this all the time. Like, not everybody can be that guy. So if you're Almora and you're getting mixed messages, they want you to be this guy and then that guy, you're like, what? I have to be me. I have to be the swing that I have that has worked. I can see how that would not be helpful for some hitters when you're trying to teach them everything at the same time like that. You're trying to teach. Could you please be Tony Gwynn and then morph into Jim Tomey? Okay, good. Thanks a lot. That's what they were trying to get people to do.
It's a tough ask. Since leaving, it's been better, but not great. I mean, it was a disaster with the Mets last year, but not a huge sample size. Only played in 47 games. But this year...
What's he hitting with the Reds?
He is hitting .267. With only a .281 OBP, he has a grand total of 3 walks against 25 strikeouts.
.267 is decent bat to ball skills. I don't know what the sample is.
OPS of .710. He's 135 at bats, 140 plate appearances, 39 games.
So I must be slugging a little bit if that OPS is up there at .700.
.430. He's got 5 homers.
Last night there was a double in the 7th for Christopher Morel that was really just a fly ball. that Nick Senzel and Albert Elmora both tailed away from. Like, there comes the ball down into the gap. Who's going to get it? Nobody. They are so the Reds.
They are the Reds.
The final out of that game, I had Ian Happ and beat the streak. He was 0-for-4 as he was standing there as the potential final out. And so for his fifth at bat, he pops it up to left, and like left fielder and shortstop both circle around the ball, bump into each other, and one of them catches it. Oh, the drama was high. But yeah.
But from the Rockies' perspective, you have to take advantage.
Yeah, who cares?
One of our favorite baseball analysts, Ben Verlander, seemingly watches every Angels game based on social media. How the hell have the Angels not been able to win when they've got Ohtani and Trout? His out-of-town perspective on the White Sox struggles and much more with Ben Verlander next on The Score.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode and catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
The Parkinson Spiegel Show.
You guys just stink today. I mean, you just stink.
Wow. I think I've been great. I was going to ask how you grade Spiegel.
You know, we've been kind of stinky too, Danny. I'll be honest with you.
Really?
Afternoons on The Score.
In the air, center field. Trout is back. No shot. Robert absolutely obliterates the first pitch. And the Sox have taken the lead 5-3. That is massive strength. Nearly 450 feet.
One. Hammered to right field on a line by Moncada.
Roared back at the wall, and that rings back in the field of play. Abreu scores, Pollock to third. Yoan Moncada lights up a baseball.
Jason Benetti, NBC Sports Chicago, with the call. We'll talk to Ben Verlander in just a couple of minutes. We had talked about, man, it was going to be like a bad timing game for Johnny Cueto and that offense being due. And in that inning where he gives up three home runs, it certainly looks like it. But then in the fifth inning, White Sox offensive explodes. They do it again in the seventh. 17 hits, 11 runs, and a bunch of homers. Homers, man. Ball go far, team go far.
If they do that like four times a week, season is not lost, folks.
That's right.
17 hits, four times a week. That would be nice. Yeah, man, Moncada back in there, seemingly healthy. We'll see what version of you on this. That was a pretty good version last night. Productive. If he's productive, especially from the left side, that would be massive. And you know what? Josh Harrison. Give it up for Josh Harrison, who's now...
He's crushing it.
He's looking like the nine-hitter, five times a week, second base or third base guy you can live with. He's hit safely in 12 of his last 16 games. He's hitting 373 over the last 16 games. There's three walks mixed in there.
Yeah, the season numbers are still awful, but this couple of weeks stretch, he's playing like they thought he was going to play.
Right. I still think that his particular skill set isn't really something that was desperately needed, but if he's going to play well, the good version of his particular skill set is solid and can be useful.
They've had games where they've had big hit totals and looked like the offense that they were supposed to be more frequently recently. The ball just hasn't gone over the wall.
Absolutely. Batting average is good. Batting average is real good overall.
Yeah, but this time you put two balls over the wall and you sprinkle that in, and all of a sudden you got some crooked numbers on the board. Yeah, it's funny how that works.
Yeah, and I love Cueto, man. I know you covered him when you were in KC, and it's just like I'm enjoying watching him so much because he got rocked, and then he adjusted. He stopped throwing fastballs and threw a lot more junk to those guys. And then his quotes after, he said he was battling for his life after that game. Something to that effect. Like
little dramatic,
yeah,
Johnny.
Little dramatic. But he said he felt like he was drowning out there, is what he said. Like he was just busting his hump, trying to make it all work. And then the White Sox homers got him going. He ends up with a quality start.
One of our favorite baseball analysts from Fox Sports and the Flippin' Bats pod, Ben Verlander, back with us on The Score by way of the Circa Resort and Casino hotline. Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. Ben, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me again, guys. Always fun.
Of course, man. Well, we feel like when we follow you on social media that you're watching every Angels game. And it was a good time to talk to you with them playing the White Sox. And you tweeted, Mike Trout is homered and Shohei Ohtani is 3-for-3 with a homer, two doubles and a walk. And the Angels trail 10-4. Incredible. It's kind of the story of the franchise, right? Like, how has this team not figured out how to be good despite having the greatest baseball player ever and modern-day Babe Ruth?
You know, I was just talking about this a little while ago today, and it almost feels like they just don't know how to do things right. Like, the blueprint that they have just doesn't work. You know, let's give the best players in baseball at the time a massive contract. Josh Hamilton, Albert Pujols, Anthony Rendon, and let's add them to our team. And it just backfires miserably. And it really is fascinating. You know, like, baseball is the only sport. If you added the two similar talents to other sports, basketball, if you added a Mike Trout-esque talent, which is arguably LeBron James, and Shohei Ohtani to the same team, they're winning a championship. This team can't even get over 500. It's remarkable how funny baseball can be, and it really is sad. And I think the world deserves Mike Trout and Shohei Ohtani in the playoffs on the biggest stage, and it just doesn't look like we're going to get it.
I feel like this is unprecedented, Ben. I mean, in this town, we're used to hearing about and talking about, like, Ernie Banks and Billy Williams and other Hall of Famers on the Cubs, and, oh, they were bad. Well, guess what? From 67 to 72, the Cubs were over 500 every year. They just couldn't get over the hump to get to first place. The Angels, the last seven seasons, the closest they have finished is 10 games back in the last seven seasons, under 500 every year. And this is multiple GMs, too. Multiple GMs now, multiple managers. And the way you're talking about it, is it Artie Moreno? Is it an inability to lead, you know, fiscally and financially in a sensible way?
I think they have massive financial issues in terms of just how their roster is built, and in terms of where they have all their money tied up. And if you have a guy like Anthony Rendon, who you're paying $30+ million a year, who hasn't seen the field for the better part of a season in a couple of years now. I mean, the guy's not playing. It's like, what do you do? And this, you know, the new GM comes in and Perry Manassi, and he appears to do things the right way. You know, his first draft, they drafted all pitchers. It was 25-for-25 across the board, all pitchers. And you think, okay, they're doing it the right way. And then they bring in this year Aaron Loop and Archie Bradley and Noah Syndergaard, Michael Lorenzen, re-sign Iglesias. And you think, okay, maybe they are doing this the right way. And then Anthony Rendon goes down, and it never appears to work out. So you end up just tuning into Angels games to watch Mike Trout and Shohei Ohtani, and for them to lose 10-4 to the Chicago White Sox, rinse and repeat over and over and over.
I had never looked at this. So Shohei Ohtani just goes into the last year of arbitration next year and then is an unrestricted free agent at 29 years old in 2024. Yep. So, one, he's definitely leaving Anaheim in 2 years, right? And two, what the hell is that guy going to get paid as a 29-year-old free agent?
Yeah, well, that's the whole – exactly. And I remember hearing some rumblings of they started to discuss the Angels an extension, and it was, you know, for the most amount of money we have seen, obviously, he's two All-Stars in one. And I believe the Angels said that was a non-starter for them. You know, don't quote me there, but along the lines of they started to have discussions, and the Angels were like, we don't want to pay that much. And now they haven't had discussions anymore. So you have to believe, one, Shohei is worth that money, and somebody will certainly pay him more than anybody has been paid before. And two, are we looking at like a move to the Dodgers or the Yankees? For, I mean, you got to imagine he wants to stay on the West Coast for the Japanese time difference and stuff. So, like, is he on the move when he's up? I mean, he said all he wants to do is win ball games, and he made that very clear. And the goal coming into this year for the Angels is, okay, we have to start winning. Let's do this, this, and this. Well, now we just have them having massive brawls, and one of the guys they bring in breaks his elbow because he fell over the rail on the brawl, and it's like, what is going on in Anaheim? Is Shohei even going to be there in a couple of years? I don't know.
This particular Angels bats, and we can move on to other stuff, but this particular team this year, like, the bottom of that lineup is trash, right? I mean, the bullpen is trash. Two starters from the rotation have been sent down by now. Maybe this was not all on Joe Maddon, is what we're learning.
I agree. Have you seen the, like, it's now famous from 2021, but the tweet making fun of the Angels that just seems to get thousands of more retweets a day? Have you seen this tweet?
I think so, where the guy made up a picture that Shohei has done something. Yes.
And it is so true. And I tweeted my tweet last night, and I thought about it. He said, every time I see an Angels highlight, it's like Mike Trout hit three home runs and raised his average to .528, while Shohei Ohtani did something that has never been done before since Tungsten Armo Doyle of the 1921 Akron Groomsmen, as the Tigers defeated the Angels 8-3.
Yes, that's exactly it. That's exactly it. The Groomsmen, the Akron Groomsmen, not a very competitive bunch.
More
really.
People named Tungsten. We're talking to Ben Verlander from Fox Sports, MLB analyst. You watch all of it, obviously, but we're following it basically every inning of every day. What's your perspective on the biggest issues for why the White Sox are underachieving?
Well, one, I would start with the manager, the guy leading the way. And it's tough for me to start there because you can't blame everything on a manager. That's just not how baseball works. There's a lot of issues going on, but I do believe that plays a factor, especially when you have a team full of young studs, to be honest with you. Guys that love the game of baseball, that play with an energy and a passion, and that don't care about the unwritten rules of baseball when there is a guy leading the way that plays by the unwritten rules of baseball. I just don't think that helps them. This team is far too talented to be under .500. We've seen in the last couple of nights how they can hit. You know, last night they put up a bunch of runs, and that's how talented this team is. So, one, you know, you want to see, I'm tired of seeing injuries around the White Sox, and I just want to see them all be healthy together, but they are still talented enough to win the AL Central with the team and the players that they have out there at any given time. So you don't like to point to a manager, but at a certain point you just look around and it's like, there needs to be a change made here. And I don't foresee one happening with the current situation there, but I do believe that's a big problem there in Chicago.
Yeah, it is a problem. I think we both agree with you that nothing is going to happen with it, and they just have to hope for nights like last night where they slug like crazy. Who is more of a threat to run away, if either one are, the Twins or the Cleveland Guardians at this point?
I don't think either runs away. I do think it ends up being a dogfight in the division. I think the Twins are the bigger threat there. I think the Guardians are a great story. What they have done this year is surprising, and nobody saw this coming, but I don't foresee them being a playoff team, and we could be talking in a couple months from now and you could say, haha, Ben, you're so dumb, like your playoff bracket last year, but maybe not.
That so, was dumb.
Thank you.
I
appreciate that. Well, I did pick the White Sox to win the World Series, but that might be the dumb, you know, that didn't work out very well for me. So, you know, I just don't foresee them being a playoff team, and I think the Twins are the better team. I think the Twins add at the trade deadline and propose a real threat to the team that should win the AL Central, that it's just going to be harder and harder the longer we get into the season in the White Sox.
Ben Verlander, what the hell's up with your brother, man? Like, seven innings of four-hit ball against the Yankees at Yankee Stadium last time. Today, eight innings of two-hit shutout ball against the Mets.
He's good.
He's 39. He's steamrolling towards another Cy Young. Is he doing anything differently, like smarter, or has he changed anything methodology-wise, as far as you know, or is this just picking up where he left off?
You know, it's a little bit of a combination. And before he went down and before he missed the time that he missed, Justin was pretty much the same pitcher throughout his career. You don't mess with him on start days. You don't talk to him. very serious about his business. It's eyes on the prize. It's not taking a moment to appreciate things. And to some degree, that has changed a little bit this year. He's still a guy you don't mess with on start day, but having his daughter and spending that time with her that he did over the course of the 2 years that he was down really allowed him to come back and have an appreciation for what's happening. Take in some moments. Yes, he's all business, but he's not as like laser focused on certain things that he's able to just appreciate things, take in the moment. And it's resulted in a really awesome year, man. I would be remiss if I didn't say how proud I was to see this happening. And look, I know I'm in the media world and he's my brother and he's on another team in Major League Baseball. And I'm not supposed to be biased, but when it comes to my brother, I will be, man. I am so proud of him and what he has been doing. And it makes me emotional seeing what he's been doing this year. And I couldn't be more proud of him. And I really do. I love him and I love what he's doing.
Hey, Ben, it's baseball, man. This isn't like a Cuomo brothers situation, okay? No one's going to be like, that Ben Verlander's biased towards Justin Verlander. Oh, I can no longer listen to the Flippin' Bats pod.
Go on my Twitter, and you can see that, you know, there are a million people that want to be that. I'm just like, okay, screw you guys. You know what? Who cares? He's my brother. He's a major leaguer. He's going to be in the Hall of Fame someday, and I'm going to talk about him if I want to.
Yeah, well, you should.
Bunch of losers.
You can tell us stuff that nobody else knows. Absolutely.
Ben, as always, man, thank you so much. We appreciate the time.
Of course, guys. Always love coming on. Thanks for having me.
That's Ben Verlander from Fox Sports and the Flippin' Bats pod. Like talking to that guy. I mean, I didn't know. His ERA's in the twos, the low twos.
Who, Verlander?
Justin Verlander again?
Dude, he's outrageous. He's ridiculous.
Only an elite team like the White Sox with a great approach offensively can beat a man like Justin Verlander.
That's the worst start of his season by far. He didn't even get four innings, gave up nine hits. The freaking White Sox. And now he's in New York, like, sticking it up the giggy of both the Yankees and the Mets.
Dude, should have been a Cub. He should have been a Cub.
If they hadn't traded for Quintana, he would have been a Cub.
I know.
They didn't have anything left. Tigers would have happily taken some combo of Cease and Eloy.
And I'm glad you said that, because one of Rick's best cuts from today was talking about the Cease and Eloy trade and his conversation with Theo.
Bourbon and a buddy, we hear what did Shane get out of Rick Hahn? We begin to go through it coming up at 4 o'clock. One of the damnedest things happened in that White Sox game last night. We discuss next on The Score.
The Parkinson Spiegel Show.
You guys are making too much noise. Dad's on the air. Please go, Gabriella. Please. Vai via. Go be on la chare. There you go. Okay, there you go. There you go.
Did you just shoo your kids away in a foreign language and then lock the door behind them? Is that what
That's
just happened?
Precisely what happened, yes. Yeah.
Afternoons on The Score.
Now, Mike Trout. I'm upset because, you know, I don't get on a plane and I do bad Subway commercials and I went 0-26. And you know whose fault it is? Joe Madden's fault. You know what you should do? You should leave me in center field and you should fire Joe Madden, because that's going to make it all better.
He does these impersonations. I swear, you would think it was the real people.
What happens if I punch a radio just directly? Just like pick up an old, I don't know, like an AM radio, if it was on 670, and I just punch it. What happens?
I'm glad you said that, because Rick Hahn and our conversation talked about hitting a file cabinet. So that's a tease.
Well, you didn't like that impression from Morning Shane? You didn't like that?
Oh, shut the hell up. You bite your
good
damn tongue.
Good old Morning
polo
Shane.
Shirt.
Good old polo Morning shirt. Shane.
That's not Morning Shane.
You know, no. Shane catching some strays.
Better than being Afternoon Dustin.
Yeah, you'd rather have that. You'd rather have the former.
Yeah, I guess so. I'd call him Morning Shane if you want. Just don't call me Afternoon Dustin.
I learned this morning that Shane is not the best player on the Odyssey softball team. I learned that.
Oh.
I think we've always known I'm not the best player, but it sure as hell ain't Evan Thomas.
I thought you were the best player.
Mully.
No, I wouldn't say I'm the overall best player.
Mully flat out giving love to Evan Thomas as both their Connor O'Donnell. I prefer our Connor O'Donnell.
Me too.
Like the moderator of the Twitch chat and the man in charge of all video things. But their Connor O'Donnell is Evan Thomas. And Mully's saying, like, he's carrying Shane Reardon on his back.
I love Mully poking the bear of Afternoon Dustin. Shouldn't you be the best player given how much you care about it?
Yeah.
No, I put the team together. I'm the constructor of the team.
You lead the league in home runs, and you're being recruited by professional softball teams.
Yeah, a big team.
Listen,
big
I'm
team.
Good. I had an embarrassing night at the plate on Monday. Like, I went 1-for-3. That's not me.
Are we doing everything we can do about the shift that and the defensive scheming that's going against you? Are you adjusting
no, we're not.
That?
I think we should okay, ban the not. Shift. I think we should ban the shift.
I think we should,
shift.
Too. Yeah, I think we should, too.
Yeah. Is Cody Westerlund the best player? He's a hell of a hitter, and he's a shortstop.
Lately, he has been, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
He had 9 RBI on Monday.
That's a good game.
2 homers.
That's a good game.
Against CHGO, possibly the worst team in the league filled with the worst people in the league.
Oh, wow. I can't speak to... I'm going to choose not to make jokes.
I can't speak to... Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah.
I'm backing off.
Yeah. No more jokes.
I'm going to have a little class. Just a little.
Mike Trout...
Dude, this was amazing.
Called out his own pitcher...
Incredible.
...for tipping pitches... during the game from center field last night. Listen to how it went down.
Angels 7-3. Mike Trout out in center field is always looking in to see if he sees something from his pitchers to be able to maybe tip what he's throwing. You see the glove hand right there, baseball in the glove for Peguera. In that spot, breaking ball. All right, so then here he has the hands a little bit lower there on the glove and then brings it up. And that gives a hitter a chance to be able to see, okay, that's going to be a fastball. So you're seeing the difference. Trout seeing the same thing. He's bringing it away from his body, and then he's taking it close to his body, depending on the pitch thrown, whether it's a fastball or a breakable. If he's seeing it there in center field, you're seeing that, and you're already being talked about that in the dugout, where you're seeing it right away. After a couple pitches thrown for a young pitcher like Peguera, they're realizing that, and they're relaying that out there. And that's all normal and legal to do.
Really,
a lot of really good hitters see those things and tendencies for pitchers quite well. Jim Edmonds was the best I've ever seen doing that. Jim Edmonds, he would know what you're throwing almost immediately.
And Rod Carew also have, yes, obviously, Hall of Famer, one of the greatest hitters ever.
So you try, like Shohei Ohtani, remember there was talk about they were doing that and saw some pitches in
right.
New York?
Uh-huh.
Well, yep. Shohei, we'll see it tomorrow. He keeps his hands in the same exact position on all his pitches.
Right.
And that's what you try to do, especially from the stretch. Full windup, it's completely different. You're never going to be able to see it like that. But the stretch, you can. You know, if you know a fastball's coming or at least a spot, you have a chance. But it really comes down to breaking pitches, because then you know, all right, if it's in the zone, I could swing it. Otherwise, I'm letting it go if I think and I know a breaking ball's coming. That's huge if a hitter knows a breaking ball's coming. Because your goal with a pitcher, if you're able to throw your secondary pitch, you're going to get a ton of swings and misses with a really good breaking ball. But hitters will lay off that, and they're going to force you in the strike zone. A flat breaking ball becomes a very hittable pitch.
You know who would
That's
be more...
one of the damnedest things I've ever seen.
You know, it would be more helpful than Mike Trout out in center field telling the other outfielders, hey, our guy is tipping pitches. What would be more helpful than Mike Trout noticing that would be one of your coaches noticing that from the dugout, perhaps. Maybe your pitching coach, perhaps, or the assistant pitching coach, the bullpen coach, any number of people. Instead, it's Trout literally signaling, hey, don't do this thing with the glove.
You think he's ever going to play in a playoff game?
Well, he did, right?
Oh, yeah.
2014.
He's never won a playoff series.
He's played in one series against Kansas City in 2014.
That's right.
He's miserable, man. The look on his face in that clip when he's like, oh my God, we're so stupid, is the look on his face.
He feels
like,
trapped.
Why do I have to be the one telling us that we're doing this? Whew. I wonder if he regrets the extension, signing it there.
I have no idea, obviously, but that was just, it was one of the damnedest things. Like, oh, there he is. Showing it off, how he's tipping the pitches. It was so obvious to him that he spotted it from center field that he was exasperated.
Do you think he'll ever surpass Leury Garcia's playoff home run total? They each have one. who will win that race?
Who would you think Tony would play Trout more than Leury Garcia if he were here?
I'd like to hope so.
You know,
I don't know, man. Those are Leury's at bats.
Like, that's what you got to look for.
The important thing,
you got to look at Leury's at bats.
Thing you really got to look at.
That's when you'll know
is Leury's play.
Well, at that point, you're looking for a single.
Yeah, exactly.
They already good night last night. He's one of
they all did.
Yeah, they all did.
It's 17 hits
because they were tipping pitches so egregiously.
Yeah, that's how White Sox broke out.
No.
The center fielder, hey. The tamale guy, the guy selling the cotton candy. Everyone can see their Timmy pitchers with the White Sox. Hey. Like, hey, we got 17 hits. Not bad.
Hey, those runs off the tamale guy were all earned, okay?
My bad.
Elvis Peguero did give up 4 earned runs in 2/3 of an inning. But some other people also got their bleep slit as well. Jaime Barria came in. I don't know if he was tipping.
At 4:40, we will do our first of 20 consecutive Bears segments at 4:40, 20 shows until Bears training camp opens. But coming up next, what did Shane Reardon get out of his close personal friend Rick Hahn? They spent an hour together today on Zoom with bourbon in hand. We don't know. He will tell us next on The Score.
You know, Danny, not that interested.
Now with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Tip, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.